time now for the nationally syndicated radio show, The World of Lori Zook. And now, here she is, the smart, the sexy, the savvy, divine Miss C.
And welcome to the show. Now, today, I have a very special guest with me. He's actually calling in from Canada, and this is a Masters and Legends special, and it's kind of a two-in-one show. I have Dave Carroll, who is a musician with the Sons of Maxwell Band. He's also a soloist, and he's a consumer advocate by accident. He wrote the video that went viral a few years ago called United Breaks Guitars, and there was actually a trilogy of songs based upon his experience that kind of shot him into stardom. So, Dave, I want to thank you for joining.
Lori, it's a pleasure to be with you.
Thank you. Now, I want to go talk about music first, because I know, you know, I've been reading up on you. I know you and your brother are both musicians. How old were you when you first became interested in becoming a musician? How'd that come about?
I think I was probably very young. I remember sort of playing with a plastic tool set and using the screwdriver as a microphone when I was probably 3 or 4 years old, and I envisioned myself singing my own songs, whatever those would sound like, to, in my imagination as a three-year-old, to a crowd of adoring fans. And I think everyone says they want to be a musician, but I really did envision it at a young age, but it wasn't until I was 20 years old that I actually picked up a guitar and sort of stepped out and waited till I moved away from home, I think, and started playing guitar at Carleton University, and we entered a talent contest shortly after that.
Now, you and your brother were a singing duo in college, correct?
That's right. Yeah, we started, and our first gig was a talent show at the residence pub called The Breathe In.
Okay, now I read recently on Facebook, didn't you just travel back somewhere to places where you used to sing?
Yeah, well, Carleton University is in Ottawa, the nation's capital in Canada, and that's where we went to university and got our start. And I haven't gone back there for a few years, but it was a really beautiful day, and I rented a bicycle and went down the canal, which connects portions of the city, and went through my old campus and went to the tunnels underneath Carleton University where we used to sing. And it was a really great trip down memory lane, and it reminded me that basically everything I like about my life now started at Carleton when I picked up that guitar and started down that path.
Now, did you have any formal music training? I mean, you started at 20, you said, so that's kind of late. Most people start when they're a lot younger.
I took a little bit of piano for about a year or so I can, if I have the time, I can probably tell you what note I'm reading on a sheet of paper, but I'm not a reader per se by any means. And then I took a little bit of saxophone in grade 7, 8, and 9, and then I put that aside. So I have an appreciation of music, and we got that from our dad. Our band's name is Sons of Maxwell, and named after our dad, and he used to come and sing to us before we go to bed at night. And my brother and I shared a room, and he'd come in with his guitar, and he never really knew all the words or all the music, but he taught us that if you don't know the music, you sing louder, and if you don't know the words, you play louder, but don't let what's holding you back get in the way.
You just make up the words of the song as you go along.
Or just stop and do another one, right? Sometimes it's
right.
Easier to play bits and pieces.
So let me ask you a silly question. Did your dad sing in the car when you guys were in the car driving?
Yeah, we all did, yep.
Very cool.
Yep. It was like a Chevy Chase movie in some ways.
Well, sounds like fun. Sounds like a fun life. Now, but you didn't go to school for music, did you?
No, I have an honors degree in political science, and as I say, I just picked up the guitar at Carleton University because I had an inkling that I kind of wanted to do that, but sort of self-taught before the internet, before there were videos to tell you what not to do, so I picked up all sorts of bad mistakes and little habits, but I got to a point where I loved music more than anything else, and I graduated at the time we were just getting into getting paid to do it.
Now, if you hadn't become a professional musician, if you hadn't written United Breaks Guitars, and you had the political science degree, would you have gone into politics? Was that something that you had possibly considered?
Not really. I think political science, I took it just because I liked the idea of social justice, and I admired people who took stands on things and made a difference. And I think probably I would have gone down the law route, maybe become a lawyer, but hard to say.
Now, have you always been a professional musician? Have you held other types of jobs?
No, I'm proud to say that Don and I, we've been wildly successful in the music business, but not because we made a ton of money or because we had so much commercial success, but because I've been able to do only what I love to do, which is play music and perform it for 20 straight years before United Breaks Guitars took off. And we had to live within our means, and we had all sorts of challenges in it as an indie band, but we were able to carve out a living doing just that for a long time. So I'm pretty proud of that.
Now, you and your brother both, are you perfect pitch people? Do you have perfect pitch where you just hear it and do it, or your high relative pitch? Because I listen to your music, and it's perfect.
I think we were pretty close. I think as brothers in a brother duo, we have perfect pitch against each other, so we're quick to tell each other when we're off pitch. But for the most part, we're close.
Now, I know you're a soloist sometimes. You play with your brother, Sons of Maxwell, sometimes. Do you put together, you know, bigger bands, more pieces?
Yeah, well, it's as an indie artist, we found early on, we started as a duo with one guitar and two voices. And that was partially because we didn't know anybody else who played, and partially because of the economies of scale. And so as the gigs allowed for it, we would expand or contract the band depending on what the budget was. So I, as a songwriter, I always write so that the songs that I write stand up on their own. And so that means I can do those anywhere in a house concert or as a solo artist, but I always envision them bigger than that. So if any chance I get to play with the band, I love doing it.
Now, I want to play one of your songs from your Perfect Blue CD, Great Divide. And I've had your CD in my car for a long time. I've been trying to learn all the words to all the songs. And it's interesting because each one to me, as a musician, each one is an individual piece of art. And what I find really fascinating about you, Dave, in listening to your music is, yes, you have the folk thing going, your folk thing going on. You're telling a story from beginning to end, but you're doing it in a beautiful way. And you tend to combine different styles of music into one, which I find unusual. And I know you'll say you're a folk singer. But I hear folk, I hear country, I hear blues, I hear ballads, I even hear a little jazz and maybe a little Dixieland and some of the stuff. But you kind of mix it together in such a way that it actually works. And I haven't heard anybody else that does that. And I think that's really pretty cool.
Oh, thank you. I've always prided myself on trying to not make the song I'm writing next sound like the one I just did. And over a few years, I guess there's a margin of, or a range, I guess, in my style. So, but it's nice to know that it's resonating with some people.
Yeah, it's eclectic to me. You know, it's not all the same, and that's what I like. And each one is an individual story. So what we're going to do, we're going to play some of the Great Divide.
Awesome.
Look to tomorrows and see only sorrows, like nothing can change. It does if you wait. I'm a proponent of seizing our moments. Is that such a crime? For me, it works fine. And it's amazing how you go on and on about what we're not. Sometimes right here, right now, is all we've got. We're at the great divide. And as our worlds collide, you close your eyes and you wish your heart could change your mind as you fall apart.
Now, I love that song, and your voice in singing that, to me, that would be a difficult song. And I'll tell you, I'm a car singer, so I try to match your pitch when I'm singing that in the car. You know, but how did you come up? What was the inspiration for that song?
I remember sort of just writing a breakup song or had, I write music first, so I had the template of the music all set out, and I tend to blurt out, sometimes it comes across as gibberish, but a line or something comes along. And I love the mountains, the Rocky Mountains, also called the Great Divide, and I sort of started going down a path of a relationship-ending song, and just sort of envisioned singing this from the top of the mountains, and I remember just blurting out, we're at the Great Divide, and the rest sort of pieced itself together. But what I liked about the song, or what I do like about it, is the coming at it softly vocally and then coming at it much more forcefully, and to me that's kind of like the West and the mountains, that you can have a beautiful mountain breeze, but it's also kind of a harsh environment and strong and rugged, and I wanted that to sort of come through in the song. So
yeah, I think it conveys very well through the song. Now, do you perform primarily in Canada? Are you on all the Canada radio stations? You know, I don't really listen to that much radio, I'll admit, in the United States, because most of the stations play the same old stuff, you know, the same 20 yeah. songs over and over, and after a while you just go, I've had enough of this. And so when I do play something, I prefer to play CDs. So how does that work for you?
Well, I think the biggest compliment you can give to me, you just did when you said you like the eclectic mix and that you find it all works together, but that has been almost the death blow for Sons of Maxwell for all these years in terms of getting commercial radio, because commercial radio wants you to be just one thing, and they have such a narrow, narrow competitive range of music. And if you could have a great country song, but if you put banjo in it before banjo became cool, they would never play it. And we've sort of been outside of the sweet spot of a whole bunch of radio genres for a long time, so we never really got much radio play. And so I kind of given up on the radio thing. And in the case of Canada, for instance, a friend of ours who tracks radio stations on behalf of other artists told me that, you know, like you said, they play 20 songs a week, and they put right. those in the rotation, and out of those, there might only be maybe 3 or 4 Canadian artists. Half of those are going to be women, and the everybody signed to a label, so it's almost like you can't succeed on getting played on radio. So
they're in the club.
Rather than get frustrated by it, I just make the music I like and find outlets for it in other ways.
Okay, now talk about some of the awards, because I saw a whole list of awards that you won.
In the East Coast of Canada has, I think, the highest concentration of talent in all sorts of genres out of anywhere in Canada, and there's an award. We call it the East Coast Music Award, and it comes in different genres and different categories, and we've won a few of those and been nominated several times. So, and that's peer-based, so to get the nod from your peers in such a talented pool is pretty gratifying. But in terms of songwriting, I've received a couple of international nods and international songwriting competitions and things of that nature.
Okay, I personally think you should be really, really famous, because what you put out is much better than most of the other stuff that you listen to, you know. And I don't know. That's just speaking as a musician. I don't like the current music of nowadays. I don't know. It just doesn't do it for me. It's repetitive. It's dull. It's dance music, and that's fine if it's for its purpose. But as far as telling a story, you definitely have it. Now. A couple of the other favorite songs I have on your Perfect Blue CD were Just As You Are and Now. And what were your inspirations? Because we're going to play in just a moment. We're going to play Now. But tell me what your inspirations were for those songs.
Just As You Are is almost a homage to James Taylor. When you have your influences, you sort of disguise them a little bit. But I'm wearing my James Taylor influence on that song on my outside sleeves. And just really like the body of work he's done over the years, so it was. I was thinking about a song that addresses the way sometimes women see themselves, and we all do. I think we all have a vision of beauty that isn't accurate, especially for the opposite sex. And so this song was sort of a shout out to women who maybe don't cherish themselves enough. And this song is saying, "I like you just as you are."
Okay, and what about Now? That one touched me deeply. That's one we're going to play in a moment.
Okay, Now is one of the most, I guess, I like all the songs, or I wouldn't have finished them, but Now has been one of the most gratifying songs because of the impact it's had on other people.
Yes.
And I was inspired after reading a book called The Power of Now by Eckhart Tolle, and in that book he talks about the present moment being all that we have, because to live outside that moment and worry about things that haven't happened or things that have happened already is technically insanity, because those times don't exist. And I thought, I want to try and explore that. So I wrote a song, and I hear from people all the time. I'm moving things, like a woman in California who asked to put Dave's song on again as though we were good buddies, and she, her daughter put it on, and her mother was in palliative care. And when the song ended, her mother had passed away, and she wrote me to tell me that.
Oh my God, I could cry over something like that.
Yeah. It's other people who have maybe a woman who was going to commit suicide, her uncle approached me a year or two after the fact and just took me aside and said, I want you to know that she listened to your song, and that's the reason she didn't do it that night, and she's still with us. So he said,
right.
Thank you. And that's very gratifying.
Yeah, because the words, well, we're going to listen to the song, but the words, you talk about how there's a way through, and it made me think about some hard times. I don't want to cry, but it made me think about some hard times in my life going, wow, somehow I got through, but I wish I had listened to that song, and I think that song actually could save a lot of lives. So let's have you play that song.
Great.
Okay.
When there's no way out, there's still a way through. So don't give up whatever you do. Surrender to moments and things as they are, from the gaps in your catch-22s. When there's no way out, there's still a way through. 'Cause now's all there is, so peaceful and still. And now you don't worry about what's happened or what will. 'Cause now never ends, and now's never been. And all of your answers waiting for you here now. When your world stands tough and weighing you down, and you've had enough of this merry-go-round, and your resistance to walls you won't move, and running through old deja vus. When there's no way out, there's still a way through. 'Cause now's all there is, so peaceful and still. And now you don't worry about what's happened or what will. 'Cause now never ends, and now's never been. And all of your answers are waiting for you here now. Don't understand how things got so far away from all you planned, and your life, it feels so hard in your fragile house of cards. Turn to your cornerstone when you're tired and feel alone. Find your way through. 'Cause now's all there is, so peaceful and still. And now you don't worry about what's happened or what will. 'Cause now never ends, and now's never been. And all of your answers lie waiting for you here.
Now, Dave, that's a very touching song. I find it hard not to cry when I listen to it. You know, I think you could save a lot of lives with that song. But it touches me deeply in the sense that it's saying try to forget about what happened in the past. And you can't necessarily worry about what's happening in the future. You have to stay in the present moment. And I know for me that's sometimes difficult because most people lament over, you know, the problems in their past. And they go, oh, my gosh, I can't get rid of these problems. And then they say, well, you know, what's going to happen in an hour, you know, next day, next week, next month, next year. And so it becomes frustrating for a lot of people. And I think what that song does is it spells out that you can't do that, right?
Exactly. And in each and every moment, you have an opportunity to move yourself forward to a better place. But it can get awful weighty on yourself to worry about things that you have no control over. And so the song is a universal truth that we just have this one moment right now, and within that moment, there's very little, if anything, to worry about. If you don't have a job in this particular moment, you're probably not starving, and that sort of thing. So you can, it's just a way of relieving the weight that you really don't have any control over.
Now, when you write songs, does your family participate? In other words, do you play off your family and say, "What do you think about this? I've written this melody, or I've written this tune," and kind of get a feel for, you know, who's your audience when you're initially writing a song?
Good question. I find it's better to have a small circle, and so that means you pick and choose. There are certain family members I think are more reliable or safer to try things on for.
Okay.
My brother's a little bit harder. I save him for a second tier because you don't want people tearing apart your stuff too early. And that's just the way brothers are, maybe, but... If the song has a decent beat to it, I'll try it on my mother, for instance, because she likes songs with a beat. But I'd sent her a song that was a little slower years ago, and she didn't like it at all, and I was kind of devastated. And she said, it kind of reminds me of that Gordon Lightfoot guy, which was a huge compliment. But she just doesn't like Gordon Lightfoot, so...
But to you're right.
Both,
yeah.
Be careful.
That's funny. Now, you were also a volunteer firefighter, as was your brother. That's kind of a risky business.
Well, it is, but if you do it right, you can mitigate the risks. But we had a respect for the fire service all growing up, and we had been traveling for many years, always sort of visiting a town for a day or two. And I moved out of the city center in Halifax, and my wife and I bought a house, and Don was out in that area as well. And we thought, why don't we try and plant a little bit of a root or two in this community? And so they had a volunteer fire department just down the road, and we joined that, and it was a great decision, and did it for 5 years, and Don ended up becoming a full-time firefighter out of that.
Okay, now, do you volunteer now for any type of, you know, nonprofit?
Funny you should mention that. I just had a meeting last week, and I'm seriously considering how I could participate in an organization called International Needs, and a new spinoff of that called Emoja, and it's sort of I want to do more with the platform that I have, and get involved in some third world work. What I really like about this organization is it's really not just an aid organization, because aid doesn't really work. You have to get into the community, find out what the needs are from the people there, and then inspire them to create change within. And money is part of that, but you need to find places where people have the drive and the passion to want to see a change. And this organization has a lot of projects around the world that I could help with.
All right, very good. Well, before we go to a break, we're going to actually go out. We're going to listen for a minute to Average Man. So stay with us.
Great.
He's an average man in an average town. He owns a mortgage on the middle ground. The man we measure against the rest, he's not right wing or too far left. He's an average man in an average town. He does good work with good strong hands. Likes the job but had other plans. He thought of college but couldn't afford the price to join or the room and board. Now he's a working man in an average town. Mary's young, around 23. The first 10 years go decently, till his wife accidentally met this average man's girlfriend, Paulette. Now he's a divorced man in an average town. Left two kids in his old ex-home. We talk most days on the telephone. He likes to raise them every other weekend, and his dear Paulette's now his ex-girlfriend. Common tale in an average town. He marries again for the company. Works, pays bills, and serves TV. He likes life better at a slower pace, waiting on a pension that young men race. Just a killing time in an average town. Skin turns old and his hair goes gray. His kids have kids and they move away. Now he thinks about days gone by and why he did all he did in his life. Like any old man in an average town.
Central Payment, your number one credit card merchant service provider in the industry. Providing e-commerce solutions, POS systems, standalone terminals, mobile apps, and much more, call Central Payment's James Carner at 813-777-4332. Looking for the lowest rates in the industry and number one customer service? Call Central Payment's James Carner at 813-777-4332. That's James Carner, 813-777-4332.
Do you suffer from back, neck, or body pain? Do you suffer from migraines or have jaw or face pain? Has conventional medicine failed you? Were you injured or in an accident? Call chiropractic physician Dr. Dan Maddock at 813-935-1664. Dr. Dan has helped thousands of patients gain relief for more than 30 years. Dr. Dan is caring, gentle, and takes his time with each patient. He's also a past president of the International Craniopathic Society, a special certification of only 300 chiropractors worldwide. Dr. Dan helps patients from the neck up and the neck down. Dr. Dan accepts most insurance plans. Don't continue to live in pain. Call 813-935-1664. Today. That's 813-935-1664, and get on track to better health.
And welcome back to the world of Lori Zook. Musician Dave Carroll with me, and we've been speaking about some of his music. Dave, do you have any funny stories that you want to share? Anything that happened musically over the years? No?
Nothing's jumping out. There's been a lot of funny stories, but...
That's all right.
Yeah, let's come back to that.
Okay. I know you said musically you were influenced by James Taylor. Anybody else?
Yeah, when I first started playing, I was obviously on the acoustic guitar, and so that was in the 80s. And so I thought back to... I liked the folk genre and stuff like that, so people that were using music to make the change. So I kind of... looked back 20 years, and I was listening to Bob Dylan and Cat Stevens and early 70s, like people like Harry Chapin, great story songwriters.
Yes.
That's where I really developed the passion and the appreciation for being able to put a story into a music and still make it pleasurable just to listen to, even if you're not listening to the lyrics.
Now, one of the composers you reminded me of a little bit was Don McLean, who did American Pie and Starry, Starry
yeah.
Night. And I don't know, in a way, it's sort of that, I call it the old style. But I like the old style. I don't so much like the new style.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah. I really do appreciate a well-told story. And in my opinion, it's incumbent upon you as a writer to not have any spare parts in terms of your lyrics or the music. And if you're asking people to pay attention for 4.5 minutes, give them 4.5 minutes of good lyric and music as well. But sometimes you hear songs that a line is basically a throwaway because they needed a rhyme and they didn't really think about it. And I just don't do that.
Well, that's what's especially interesting about you, because one of my notes was that your use of words is very well thought out. I mean, just how you use them, the words that you use, and you said you write the music first. Now, when I write music, I usually write out the words, and then I find it easier to put in the melody and harmonize it. But to me, you're kind of doing it backwards to me, so I'm not sure how that works out, but it does for you. And so I just wanted to compliment you on that, because when I listen to it, you hear the whole story, but it's not just the words. It's also the inflection of your voice and how you utilize it, like in The Great Divide.
Yeah, it's a tricky thing to be effective as a singer-songwriter because of all those elements that you have, all those tools at your disposal. If you want to really push yourself, you kind of have to try and get a lot out of your voice, how you inflect it, the words you use and the combination, but also the types of words in relation to the music. And it's a juggling act that really makes it an artistic adventure, songwriting.
Well, I think you've definitely got it. And I want to talk a little bit about sort of your accidental career, which was, well, I'll let you summarize what happened with United.
Well, as a traveling musician with Sons of Maxwell in 2008, on March 31st, 2008, my brother Don and I were on our way to Omaha, Nebraska with two other bandmates, and we flew from Halifax on United Airlines for the first time, and they took our guitars and put them in the belly of the plane without an option to do otherwise. And when we got to Chicago to deplane and catch our connector, a woman sitting behind our bass player looked outside the window and she said, "Oh my God, they're throwing guitars outside." And sure enough, my guitar, I was carrying two of them. One of my two guitars was the only one out of the band's guitars that were broken, but it was very badly damaged, and United Airlines didn't want to take any responsibility for it for 9 months, really. And I tried every avenue that was given to me, and ultimately they said because I didn't open a claim within 24 hours that I wasn't, or they weren't responsible for the damage to the guitar. And so I responded at that point, saying that I was going to write 3 songs and make 3 music videos about my experience with United, and I was going to post them on YouTube with the goal of getting 1 million hits in 1 year with all 3 of these videos combined.
Okay.
And January came around, and I wrote the first song of 2009. And in June of 2009, I finally got my friends together after recording the song, and we went to the Waverly Fire Hall, where I'd been volunteering, and we shot the first in a trilogy of videos called United Breaks Guitars, and for a $150 budget, thanks to the donated efforts of everybody, made a video that was posted on July 6th, and it went viral and hit 1 million in 4 days, and today is nearly 16 million hits, and it had a huge impact in the world, not just in terms of viral videos, because they were still kind of new at the time, but it had a big impact in business because BBC News announced that it had dropped United stock by $180 million, or 10% of their market cap, which was massive news because businesses everywhere now had to wake up and realize that social media is here to stay, and one customer could detract from your brand if you are the type of company that doesn't try and take care of everybody all the time.
Yeah, they made a big mistake. And United, don't they license from you the video so that they can use it as an example of what not to do?
One of the many media things that I had a chance to do was The View with Whoopi Goldberg and everybody, and they posted on The View a quote saying that they were using my video as a training tool to improve customer service. And Whoopi Goldberg said, "Are they paying you a license fee, Dave, for the use of your intellectual property?" And I said, "No, they're not, Whoopi." And she said, "Mm-hmm." So I phoned United, and I said, "Whoopi Goldberg said you should be paying me a license fee." And ultimately, they agreed to, and they gave me the same fee that other corporations had been paying me to use my video as a training tool, and they became a customer of mine at the end of the day, but I don't think they're using it any longer. They said they weren't, but they did pay the fee.
Yeah, well, they don't want to lose another $180 million down the road. Now, Lee has a question for you.
Well, hi, Dave. A few things came to mind. First of all, you know, you could have shorted United stock before you put the video out there.
That would have, if I could have predicted that and anything else, I probably would have done things like that, maybe. But
that's funny.
I didn't, who could have predicted that?
I wonder if that's illegal. Do you think that's illegal?
I don't know.
Short the stock and then try to ruin the company.
He didn't know it was going to happen, though, with the song. But yeah.
The point is I didn't do it.
You didn't
yeah.
do it.
Yeah.
Well, it's one of those now things, you know. can't look back at that. But I was just curious, actually, about what happened with the guitar. I saw a photograph, and it's like the head was practically snapped off. Is that right? It was broken off
the
neck?
That's a good point. So what you see in the video was not the actual guitar that got broken. That was a prop, because it was sort of like internal injuries for my guitar, where it was thrown in an upright position so that the block that is kind of like the frame of your car, I'm told, if that breaks, it's kind of totaled, was really badly cracked, and it wouldn't show up on camera. So the real Taylor guitar was a 710 Cedar Top Taylor, and it got repaired in these intervening months when I was trying to get United to take responsibility for $1,200 from someone who did a very nice repair on it. And so I still have it, and I play it. But the other guitar I also still have as just a sort of a gag prop thing, We smashed the head off that one because it was already broken.
And Taylor gave you a couple of guitars, correct?
They sure did, yeah.
Yeah. They did good PR.
They invited us there, and they said, take your time and pick two when you're done.
Yeah, amazing. Well, let's play a little bit of United Breaks Guitars number one.
I flew United Airlines on my way to Nebraska. The plane departed Halifax, connecting in Chicago's O'Hare. While on the ground, a passenger said from the seat behind me, my God, they're throwing guitars out there. The band and I exchanged a look, best described as terror, at the action on the tarmac, and knowing whose projectiles these would be. And so before I left Chicago, I alerted three employees who showed complete indifference towards me. United, United, you broke my Taylor guitar. United, just admit it, I should have flown with someone else or gone by car. 'Cause United breaks guitars.
All right, Dave, now that was the first video. That's the one that you said got, what, up to 16 million hits up to now, correct?
Right.
Okay, and that was a well-done video. I play it all the time. I have your Perfect Blue CD with the bonus one with all three United Breaks guitars because I like to sing them in the car. You know, it's a happy – for me, well, it's sort of – I don't want to say a punishment, but part of what I do as a credit consultant is consumer advocacy, and I try to help people who have been wronged. But I admire the fact that, you know, what you did on social media was a lesson for that company should have just done the right thing to begin with, and it would have set a good example, but instead they said no. And Ms. Erlich said no. And so, you know, you were shot really into stardom, becoming a keynote speaker. You wrote a book. What did it feel like to have that? I mean, I sit here and go, you must have been shocked, like going, oh my gosh, this can't be happening to me.
Yeah, in those first few weeks for sure, it was unbelievable because I had no media training and I had no way of ever predicting that this would happen. And really no team, no record label or any support team aside from a very small group. And so fortunately, that small group did come together. My wife and a good friend, Julian Marantet, took time off from his job to become my right-hand man, and my parents were around and helping and that sort of thing. And we managed. There were interviews coming in from all over the world all the time, so I would do interviews from like 7 in the morning till 11 at night, and then go to sleep for a couple of hours and wake up and do the European morning circuit with the time changes and stuff. And, you know, 10,000 people had emailed in the first few weeks, and it was intense, but it was exhilarating because you never knew who was going to call, and all these people that you heard about, celebrities or noteworthy people were mentioning this thing online, and you were hearing about it from people, and it was really great.
It's 10,000 emails. I mean, you must have had family helping you. I can't picture how you answer 10,000 emails.
And they were coming in through Outlook Express too. It's on one computer, right? So we were always in danger of losing everything. And
oh my gosh!
Yeah, it was really intense.
That had to be amazing. Well, what we're going to do, we're going to play about a minute of United Breaks Guitars 2, which is a continuation of the story and a different style of music.
Yeah.
All right, hang on.
What did you mean when you said you were sorry? I'm a bit confused. I think you owe for wrecking my guitar, but you don't think you do. I found a guy to fix it for $1,200, but you tell me that you're sorry and it's my tough luck. United sees no need to make anything right. Oh, Miser Awake, we don't need to fight. If you just come to your senses, accept the consequences of you letting certain baggage handlers smash my property. We could be best buddies, but our friendship has been muddied by a flaw. United Airlines policy.
Okay, totally different style of music there. Almost honky-tonk.
Yeah, well, you'd asked earlier about funny stories, and as soon as I heard that, it sparked one, because you could hear the tuba as the bass line in that song.
Yeah.
And I played that on my keyboard on a tuba patch.
Oh, so it wasn't a real tuba.
No, and you can tell there's a solo in the song that I didn't play. It was a piano player on the session. I said play a tuba solo. That would be almost impossible for a tuba solo player to play, because in the video, Miss Earl Wick, the customer service rep, and I are best friends having three-legged races in a picnic, but she's also playing a tuba for comedy.
Yes.
And after the song came out, I received an email from Alan Baer, who's the principal tubist in the New York City Philharmonic, or the symphony there, and he said, if you ever need a tuba player again, call me, but just don't ever do that again.
that's funny, because it's such a, you know, there's so much humor. You could have taken like a nasty tact and, you know, done it the wrong way, but you actually almost, you did it like, hey, here's my problem, and so I'm gonna kind of have fun with it.
Yeah, and I think that was one of the big lessons. I just sort of did that, but looking back on what I did well or what worked really well was that there was a compassionate design to all this stuff where I didn't come across as angry and vengeful.
All right, now, Miss Erlwig, was she was that a real person's name?
Yeah, it is. It's a customer service rep out of Chicago that I communicated with by email.
Okay. I want to actually have just a minute to play the third United Breaks Guitars. All right, hang on for a minute. We're going to do about a minute of that.
Had some trouble with United. I wrote a song and put it on YouTube, and it went around the world from Timmins to Timbuktu. Now I'm done being mad at United. Essentially, they broke my career. I was given two new tailors and a heck of an interesting year. But there's a long line of people with a story like mine who tell me in an email every day that United needs to change in a big way. Because they're mad.
We're mad.
I told you they were mad. United, now they're saying,
wish I never had. You say that you're changing, and I hope you do, 'cause if you don't, then who would fly with you?
Okay, I love that one. That's country. We're ready to jump around and dance here in the studio for that one. You know, what does your family think about everything that happened? You know, about fame coming to you.
They've been. We have a very small but supportive family, so they've all been sort of enjoying the ride with me, and that's made it all the more meaningful to me. I think if I didn't have the family I have, it might have gotten boring for me. But it's really neat to. I like telling the story of how when I was on The View, that's my mother's favorite show, and her reaction to that was just over the top. But my dad, not so much because he didn't like The View, but when I did Reader's Digest, my dad lost his mind. He's like, Reader's Digest, son, this is huge.
That's funny. I mean, yeah. you, all over the world, where do you speak? You speak at big corporations, and you write songs for them too, right?
Yeah, and it's been 25 countries now. I've kind of told the story in one way or another, and some big companies, huge companies, but also small organizations and not-for-profits, and because it works everywhere, because the ultimate message that I give is that we're all connected and that we need to care more about each other. So that works everywhere. But one of the things that I didn't do so much before that I really like to do now is bring out the essence of a organization or a company that I respect that maybe doesn't have the in-house talent or the vision to do that. So I kind of bring that to the table, and it's really gratifying when you write a song for people that really believe in what they're doing, but it might not appeal to other people, and you hit it out of the park. It's a really good feeling.
Now, are you allowed to mention the names of any of the companies you've written songs for?
I think so. I did one of the early ones was for a company called Sandvik Coromant, and they do cutting tools. They're a worldwide company, and I enjoyed the process. I interviewed probably 15, 20 people to find the common threads that make the company what it is, and they're huge into customer service and care and that sort of thing, so it was a nice fit. But I just did another project that just finished up this last month, and it was for an organization called Operation Lifesaver, and they're a not-for-profit company that works on behalf of Amtrak and all the train companies in America, because someone gets hit by a train every 3 hours there.
Oh my gosh.
And they wanted a song that brought out in a lighter delivery if possible the importance of train safety for males aged 18 to 28. So it was a bit of a challenge to do that, but I got to do a music video for it as well, and it came out really really strongly, and they were happy with it, so it was a lot of fun.
Now, are you really as funny in real life as you are, you know, on the videos? Because you got a
more
sense
funny,
of humor.
Larry,
you're more funny.
More funny than that.
Now, United Breaks Guitars, did that help? I mean, I'm assuming that had to have helped your musical career, even though maybe it wasn't the way you planned.
Yeah, exactly. I thought when this happened, the first thing in the first week, I thought this is going to result in people calling me for festivals and things. Now I have a platform and I'll get a lot of music gigs out of this. And it didn't work that way at all. In fact, a lot of festivals and people, they're almost turned off by the success of United Breaks Guitars because they think of it as quirky and they don't appreciate YouTube, maybe. And it's really frustrating in that sense.
Yeah.
But there are millions of people who have heard about Dave Carroll and this song, and some of them have gone looking. So I have fans in the world that would never have heard my music before in any way.
Now,
if it weren't for that.
United Airlines, do they know it's you coming on the plane? Because I'm sure you probably still fly them from time to time, or no?
I do, because they're the only Star Alliance game in the U.S. these days, and so I fly Air Canada usually, and so I fly with them quite a bit, and I know they listen to social media. I was going through the airport one time, and I said online that I would be flying with United, and the next morning, only a few hours later, I went through, and when I got through security, someone came up and said, "You're Dave Carroll, right?" And I said, "Yeah." And they said, "I know, because when you went through, the manager came up to the wicket, and the employee said, 'Don't worry, I was nice to him.'"
That's funny. I'm thinking, Dave, that you should be selling T-shirts with your name and United Breaks Guitars.
Well, I do have a T-shirt that has the broken guitar logo, which is my logo for Big Break Enterprises, which I'm happy to send to you if you'd like it.
Oh, that would be. I would wear your shirt all the time. I'd probably sleep in it. and books. We just got a minute to go, but tell me, you wrote a book.
I did, and it was based around this story and the insights. So it's called United Breaks Guitars: The Power of One Voice in the Age of Social Media, and I enjoyed that process so much that I'm working on another one. Around the area of compassionate design and this idea that companies, the only way forward isn't to just care a little bit more because it looks good. Caring and instilling compassion across the board is the most profitable way to stay relevant and going forward with companies.
Well, I think you're an amazing person. I want to thank you for being on my show. And how can people get a hold of you?
I'm always online. You can get me at davecarrollmusic.com. That's my website, davecarrollmusic.com. And email, and the bat signal works, and anything works. I'm easy to find.
Thanks so much, Dave. And, hey, listen, keep in touch with me. You're always welcome to be on the show.
Thanks, Lori. Thanks, Lee.
You're welcome. And join us next week on the World of Lori's Own.
Blue United Airlines on my way to Nebraska. The plane departed Halifax, connecting in Chicago's O'Hare. While on the ground, a passenger said from the seat behind me, "My God, they're throwing guitars out there." The band and I exchanged a look, best described as terror, at the action on the tarmac, and knowing whose projectiles these would be. So before I left Chicago, I alerted three employees who showed complete indifference towards me. United, United, you broke my Taylor guitar. United, United, some big help you are. You broke it, you should fix it. You're liable, just admit it. I should have flown with someone else or gone by car. 'Cause United breaks guitars. When we landed in Nebraska, I confirmed what I'd suspected. Mike Taylor'd been the victim of a vicious act of malice at O'Hare. So began a year-long saga of pass the buck, don't ask me, and I'm sorry, sir, your claim can go nowhere. So to all the airlines people, from New York to New Delhi, including kind Miss Earlwig, who says the final word.